we're very excited to have a musician with us who's a 16-time Grammy Award winner, a member of the Downbeat Hall of Fame, the 2010 Downbeat Artist of the Year, and one of the most creative and talented musicians in jazz over the last 40 years. On solo piano, Chick Corea. Thank you so much. Chick Corea in our KPLU Seattle Performance Studio. And you've performed with so many different groups, so many different styles, so many different subgenres. What have you done to be so versatile and allow yourself to be such a versatile musician? I mean, you've been called the jazz chameleon. What have you done to maintain that practice?
You know, I've had a simple way live or handle myself, which is I don't think about myself. I don't analyze myself. I don't put myself into categories. I don't try to see what I've done and see how good it is. I do that in order to improve stuff, but I don't know, man. You know, I think what I actually do is just I stay interested and I keep on delving into music and getting together with musical partners that I'm really interested in learning from. I keep a student kind of perspective in my life so that I'm always learning something new, and that keeps me fresh.
You just had a month-long birthday celebration at the Blue Note in New York City. You did 40. You performed 40 times, 10 different lineups. Everybody from Bobby McFerrin to Return to Forever Unplugged to with Herbie Hancock. What goes into planning something like a month-long birthday celebration of the Blue Note with so many different groups?
I guess a lifetime of experience, in a sense, because I sat down with my wife Gail and with my manager, and when we got the invitation to spend a month in New York, and wrote a wish list. Said, "Well, who would you like to come?" And I just wrote a wish list, and you know, magically, practically everybody on the original list, somehow they were able to make it. You know, then it just became, you know, a lot of work. Of most of my work was librarian work, of putting sets together and getting set lists to the musicians. It was pretty intense, but it was glorious.
Now, when you put together shows like this, do you have music in mind and then try and fill the show with the right musician, or do you have the musician in mind first and then fill it with the music?
Oh, always the musician, always. It's always the person who I play with, which is the inspiration and where the music actually comes from. And actually, I consulted with the other people who came, the other musicians who came, as much as I possibly could by phone and email to see what they would like to do.
Well, we'd love to hear another song, if you wouldn't mind.
Okay, let me, you know, I've been fooling around with this song, which I played for Stevie Wonder. Stevie was given a kind of a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Apollo Theater. Several months ago, and I was invited to participate. So I learned this song of Stevie's, and I'm going to practice it for you a little bit.
Sounds great.
It's called Pastime Paradise.
All right. Chick Corea on 88.5 KPLU. Thank you. wonderful. Chick Corea on 88.5 KPLU. Now, you've played with so many world-class musicians over the years. I wanted to ask you about a couple that you've worked with. And the first one I wanted to ask you about is the great legendary drummer that just passed away, Paul Motion. What was it like working with Paul? Can you tell me a little bit about him?
I've known Paul since the 70s, and we did some things together way back then, but didn't really get to know him intimately and hang out with him until this past year, actually. I'm very happy we finally got a chance to work together. We played for 2 weeks together with Eddie Gomez at the Blue Note, and we recorded everything, and actually the recording is out. It's called Further Explorations. And I was happy we were able to capture that. But in those 2 weeks, I got to know Paul, and we hung out. And he was definitely, I don't know, he was a self-made man. He was a Renaissance man. He just had his own beautiful idea about how he wanted his life to be, and he lived it exactly that way. He only worked the music and the jobs that he was really interested in. In fact, the past, I don't know, 10, 20 years of his life, he decided he never wanted to leave Manhattan. He never took a gig outside. Even in Brooklyn, he wouldn't take a gig, you know.
I think you called him the free spirit of jazz. Is that right?
That's exactly true. And we had a really wonderful time working together those 2 weeks. So I'm happy we got it all on tape.
I also wanted to ask you about your experience working with Miles Davis.
Hard to capsulize that. That's a big part of my life. There was a run-up that started from 1947 when I first started listening to Miles on vinyl. My dad had 78 RPM vinyl of Miles playing with Charlie Parker. And then I actually was maybe one of the first guys to jump and grab each new release that Miles made, starting from his first one called Dig in 1951. So by the time I met him and worked in his band, which was 1968, I had followed everything that he had done.
How did you come to meet him?
Actually, the first time I met him was in the men's room at Birdland, the old Birdland. He just was there, and we just said hello. Then I met him again when I was working at Mitten's Playhouse with Blue Mitchell and Junior Cook's band, and Miles sat in and played with us, and we exchanged a few comments back then. But I didn't really get to meet him until that first night we worked together in Baltimore.
And what did you take away from, I mean, if you can capsulize it a little bit, what did you take away from working with Miles?
Miles had a very, very high ethical standard about following through on, I guess you could call it, his freedom, his individual freedom to express himself. He just did not ask for license from anyone or the environment or to do what he envisioned to do. And that ended up being the most magnificent strength that I saw coming from Miles, aside from all of the other actual musical and aesthetic beauties that he produced. Plus, he was a really wise man. And I think there was incredible wisdom about the way he carried on his life and the way he handled his musicians, and so forth. But that strength, that's what I took away. Individual freedom of expression.
Well, after a month like you've just had at Blue Note, which must have been, maybe for the lack of better words, overwhelming to a degree with all the great shows that you got to play. What's next?
Well, I've got a bunch of things lined up, actually. I'm going to record a recording with Wynton Marsalis and the Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra, a set of arrangements that Wynton and his arrangers did of my music, which came out really well. We did some gigs at Rose Hall earlier this year in New York, and it was a blast working with Wynton and the band. So we're going to record that. And then next year I have... Performances lined up. A lot with Gary Burton as a duet. We have a new record coming out. We're going to add a string quartet, the Harlem String Quartet, to our duet, and we're going to tour with that in the fall. I have a month of touring with Bobby McFerrin. We're going to do some duets in Europe.
That's good. He's got to be fun to perform with.
He's amazing. He's one of the most amazing artists and musicians that I've had the honor to work with. And then I have some trio tours toward the end of the year with Christian McBride and Brian Blade.
Well, again, we're so happy to have had you in the studio. Would you mind playing one more song for us?
I had two prepared. I'll wing something off for you. Let me see. What the heck?